The Nerdcast Empire is on the air. It is another episode of the Hard Rock Empire on this Sunday night here on the Nerdcast Empire. I'm Matt in the studio. Great to have you along with us. We are talking all things hard rock and heavy metal for the next hour or so. We're going to be going through some news headlines, including a preview of the upcoming Record Store Day, which will be coming up later this week. And we will also talk about the best new hard rock and heavy metal from the release date of March the 21st. And then we'll get into the vault, talk about some classic albums, and we'll wrap things up with a power trio. A question as we talk about the top three of something this week. Album opening tracks going to be on the power trio coming up in our final segment today. Join me in the studio, as always, is Mike. Mike, how's it going?
It's going. It was a different week as far as new releases go. I think kind of an interesting week where there may be a couple kind of obvious picks, but then once you get past that, a lot of stuff that's just kind of maybe outside my wheelhouse, which is both a challenge and kind of a cool opportunity to listen to something maybe you wouldn't immediately jump on. And kind of the one that fits into that category for me this week ended up being really good. So kind of excited to talk about that.
Yeah, definitely some different stuff this week. I mean, we had some kind of traditional stuff that we typically pick, and then there was some stuff that was outside the box. And when we get to the music segment, as always, I'll post the playlist that Mike puts together in the chat. Definitely encourage you to go through this week's playlist. Definitely a lot of variety this week. I think you'll find something maybe a little bit different that you'll like on this week's playlist. But we have four bands and four new albums we'll talk about coming up in the second segment of this program. So we encourage you to stick around for that. And of course, we play clips from those albums each and every week. The best place to hear those clips is live on Twitch or on YouTube. You can catch us here 7 o'clock Eastern time in the U.S. on Sunday night. You can also hear us wherever you get your podcast, but the podcast version of this will not have the audio clips. So it's like to remind everybody of that. So let's dive into news headlines. And really, we're starting off with a news preview more so than a news headline as we are getting into Record Store Day coming up this week. Of course, it is the 12th of April, so that's a little bit later on this week. And I posted a link in the chat for Twitch and YouTube that includes a link to a lot. I don't know if it's every single one, but it's certainly a great majority of special releases that will be coming out on Record Store Day. And there's a good chance that a band you like, whether they're a current act or possibly a retro act, is releasing something. We have some bands releasing brand new albums. We have some re-releasing classic albums. Others are still going through it and possibly finding rarities or remixes of songs. And then kind of the final category is live concert footage, where they're taking full concerts or parts of full concerts and doing a vinyl release of those for Record Store Day. Mike, I know you've gone through the entire list. What jumps out at you as far as ones you might like to pick up on the 12th?
Yeah, there are definitely quite a few. It's kind of wild because so many of these items on the list, even if they interest you, it's kind of a passing interest. Like, oh, it's kind of a rarities album. I don't need it, but if I'm out and I want to check it out, I certainly might consider jumping on it. There's not like that obvious thing like, man, I better get that or I'm out of luck. But a couple of standouts to me, Aha, they have Hunting High and Low 1984 demos. That's kind of cool. Black Sabbath, Eternal Idol, one of the Tony Martin albums. I think that'd be kind of cool to own on vinyl. A band who I think is still kind of underrated in the realm of 90s rock, Collective Soul, their album Blender being released on vinyl. You got a live album from Dokken, Beast from the East. You have Flotsam and Jetsam, their 1997 album High. You have a picture disc single from him for the song Join Me, which is like one of his big first hits over here. Like a demo single from Geddy Lee featuring two demo tracks from the recording sessions of his 2000 solo album, My Favorite Headache. The 45th anniversary edition of Saxon's Wheels of Steel would be kind of cool as well. And finally, Sweet's Desolation Boulevard 50th anniversary live and demos. I think that would also be a pretty neat thing to check out.
Yeah, a lot of really good stuff there and a lot of variety. Again, some new stuff, some old stuff, some remix stuff there. Just a few other ones that kind of caught my eye. Dead or Alive releasing the Youthquake remixes, which, of course, best known for You Spin Me Round Like a Record. Kind of fitting on Record Store Day to pop that one out there. Going down the list a little bit more, Duran Duran, Dance Macabre Deluxe. I think some people really enjoyed that. That's one that people may want to pick up. One that I just saw on here that I think I missed the first time when I went through is Fleetwood Mac releasing their self-title from 1975. Of course, that includes songs like Rhiannon, Over My Head, Say You Love Me, Landslide, I'm So Afraid. That's a really good album, kind of underrated because Rumors was really kind of that mega album of the 70s.
Yeah.
But the self-title was really solid there. Some other ones, Peter Gabriel's got one coming out, Ovo, scrolling down the list a little bit farther. You know, again, there's just so many different releases. The follow-up for Harvey Danger to what was his big album that include Flagpole Sitta. That's not on this release, the King James version 25th anniversary deluxe edition. But if you are a fan of his, that's kind of the follow up to that that big hit. Scott Ian releasing Black Knight Sword of Rage, the music from the original Pinball soundtrack. I thought that was kind of outside the box. That's
different.
Kind of interesting. If you're a fan of Jethro Tull, Songs from the Vault, 1975 to 1978. Mike mentioned the Geddy Lee demos. I think that's something that will certainly attract a lot of attention, and rightfully so. There were a couple as we get down toward the end of this list as I scroll through here, and it's just a ton of albums coming out. And again, you know, a lot of this stuff is not new material necessarily, but just a remix. Alan Parsons Project, iRobot coming out, Work in Progress. Continuing to scroll down, Rage Against the Machine live on tour 93, if you're interested in that. Let's see. There were a couple more down near the bottom of this list that I wanted to point out. I think you mentioned, did you mention Soul Asylum?
No, I missed that one.
After the Flood, live from the Grand Forks Prom, June 28, 1997. Stone Temple Pilots live in New Haven, 1994. Again, the live stuff, something a little different, but you know, sometimes those live albums aren't necessarily always readily available. So those are kind of cool that you're doing that. Sweet with Desolation Boulevard, 50th anniversary. I think you mentioned that. That's a really good one. Talking Heads live on tour. Talking Heads are great. Certainly worth listening to. Thin Lizzy's Jailbreak alternate edition or alternate version will be coming out. And then like, you know, you got Thompson Twins, Toad the Wet Sprocket from 1992. Just a lot of interesting stuff. I feel like there was a couple more that I, for some reason, can't find quickly. Is Wang Chung. That was the other one I was going to point out. Everybody Have Fun Tonight. Of course, a classic release from them from the 1980s. And yes, Live at the Rainbow, London, 1972. That's a really good collection as well, which includes tracks like And You and I, I've Seen All Good People, and Roundabout live on that release. So a lot of really good stuff. And I think it's kind of wild how this Record Store Day has kind of grown as people have resumed collecting vinyl. It's become kind of the cool thing to do once again.
Yeah, I would love to know the annual sales and what they've done year to year. The first Record Store Day was back in 2008. And while I know that people were still collecting vinyl at that point in time, I feel like it's only gotten to be a bigger deal. And vinyl prices have only increased since then. So I would love to know how large this has gotten and what the numbers around that look like.
Yeah. And if you're interested in checking out, check out your local record store on the 12th. That'll be coming up. And again, the full list you can see, you can look for it online. Obviously we have it in the chat, but if there's some other stuff you're looking for, I think there's a little something for everybody, and it's great to support, especially record stores that are, you know, have actually kind of bounced back a little bit, like Mike said, because this thing has kind of taken off. But always great to support your local businesses. So try to do that on Record Store Day. Just a couple other news items, kind of like one's really has to do with lineup changes current, and the other one has maybe to do with lineup changes previous. We'll start with the current one, and I don't typically go through like the whole this person left the band, this person came into the band, but the news did break that Shannon Larkin and Tony Rombola have officially left Godsmack. It's something that actually happened back in last year. Like, it really just didn't come out. And I think when you read this article, which I posted in the chat, it seems like the reason maybe it didn't come to the forefront is this seems to be a pretty amicable breakup, that these guys have been on the road for a long time. They're not young anymore. They don't really want the grind that is the road. And we're seeing that happen a lot more from these bands that have been around for a long time. And yeah, it's kind of hard to imagine these guys are pushing 60 here. But you kind of get it. Like, it's just the road has never been easy, and it's probably, you know, harder now than ever because you do have to grind to make any money off of it. So, again, not really a controversial story, more just like, you know, everybody's still friends and they wish him well, but we really just can't do this anymore.
Yeah. You know, the story is interesting because when I read into it, it feels to me like you have a band kind of split on how they want to scale back their careers moving forward. Because back in 2023, Sully Erna had stated that the album they were working on, Lighting Up the Sky, was going to be the band's last body of work. The band wasn't retiring. They were still going to tour and perform, but they weren't going to create new music. So there you kind of have he and presumably the other member of the band, Robbie Merrill, stating, this is how we want to continue. We want to tour, we want to perform, but not make new music. He since kind of walked it back, saying that if later they decide to do one more for the road, that could still happen. You know, meanwhile, if you read that article on Metal Injection, Shannon Larkin says that we're presumably referring to he and Tony Rombola are already making new music. So it kind of seems like at some point in time, maybe 2024, maybe before that, given the Lighting Up the Sky situation, the band kind of thought, hey, we need to think about how we want to wind this down. And you had two members of the band saying, well, instead of making new music, let's just perform. Let's go and tour. And the other two guys are like, you know, I kind of would prefer to continue doing the creative side of it and not the touring. So it's kind of interesting. And I'll be interested to see what they end up coming up with for new music. But yeah, you read the article and you know, they're basically coming out saying, hey, still go see Godsmack. The dudes they got in the band now are great guys. Keep supporting them. They rock, you know, no hard feelings. It's kind of refreshing to see a band kind of go their separate ways that way and it not feel contentious.
I will say it is at least somewhat noteworthy that the last line of the article does say, like, the band hasn't had any comment on this. So you do hope that it really is as amicable as they're making it sound. But I do think you kind of hit the nail on the head where it's just a matter of you got a couple guys that want to just play the hits, which is completely, they've earned that right. They've had the hits. They've earned the right to go out and just tour and see the world and play your live songs and do that. And you have a couple guys that maybe love the idea of getting in and making new stuff and, you know, the touring stuff they can take or leave at this point in their life. And so they just kind of go their own way and, you know, no hard feelings. And again, that's really how it should be, that, you know, if you just disagree, then just go off and do your own thing. You don't have to make a big deal out of it. You don't have to have a big giant blow up over it and make it a scene. But, you know, it's always sad when in classic bands do kind of split. And this is clearly a split. But at the same time, it seems like everybody's happy with the decisions made. So no harm, no foul. And everybody kind of can go ahead and just do the things they want to do going forward.
Yeah. And it could also be a matter of, obviously, a lot of work goes into creating a new album. And I haven't looked at the numbers, but it's possible and probably likely that Godsmack's album sales never quite lived up to those first couple releases in the future. And you start thinking, is it really worth that kind of grind when we could just go out and play the hits and make a decent bit of change doing it that way?
Yeah. I mean, it's the sure thing instead of maybe the risk there, but yeah, I mean, again, totally makes sense from each side. They both have very logical arguments and certainly wish them all the best. And again, you can still go see Godsmack. They're out there on tour with the new bandmates, and we'll, like Mike said, we'll kind of keep an eye on what the other guys are going to be doing. If they release something, it'll probably show up on our radar at some point down the road, and we'll definitely give it a listen for sure. One other news story to talk about, and again, you know, we talked about a current lineup change. Now we're talking about a former lineup change, and again, not really anybody's fault, obviously, in this situation, but Linkin Park has downgraded their LA show due to low ticket sales. They've also removed a couple of Brazilian shows. They were originally planning on playing Dodger Stadium with a capacity of 56,000, and they were going to play with Queens of the Stone Age. That has now been moved to the Intuit Dome, which we have seen WWE run that. That's a really cool building. Yeah. So, I mean, it's not like they're running, you know, the burned out Shoney's. Like, this is still a really awesome building, but it's significantly smaller at 18,000. And the opener has gotten smaller with JPEG Mafia now being the
presumably
opener.
Presumably. I'm not familiar with
that. Yeah, maybe they are, but I don't know as far as I know, but, they also have some deals where you can get tickets for $39.50, two tickets for $39.50. So kind of running the two for one deal. And
JPEG Mafia is an American rapper, singer, and record producer.
Okay, fair enough.
So it is not a them, it is a he.
Okay, fair enough.
As it turns out, not a band.
And, you know, they will have some different opening acts. And, of course, they're coming to Sonic Temple as well.
Yeah.
So we'll get a chance to see them up there. They're doing some shows with Grandson, Architect, Spirit Box, some other bands throughout this tour. It's a pretty lengthy tour. It goes all the way through into November. And again, some dates in Brazil have been dropped as well, presumably for ticket sale issues. Obviously, tough situation here with Linkin Park. You know, on the one hand, you're happy that they're still existing,
yeah,
as best they can. But I think, you know, the combination of maybe people just not wanting to see the new Linkin Park and just the difficulty of bands selling out big venues like baseball stadiums. Not everybody can do that. And I don't think that's any shame on Linkin Park. I just think that's a pretty ambitious goal that maybe just was a little bit too ambitious.
I mean, there obviously comes a point where the ticket price becomes maybe a little more than what you could possibly feel like is a value for paying and seeing them live. And I think anytime you have a band who had such a resonant lead singer, someone who really people really love Chester, he clearly was kind of the poster child of a generation as far as is kind of that angsty nu metal vocalist. And I just, you know, nothing against their new singer, but I think maybe once you get over that initial, hey, they're back, you start thinking, yeah, but it's not quite the same. I think you're going to run into that problem. And maybe the thought of you selling tickets like you did back in 2005 might be a little far-fetched for multiple reasons. I think any band that's been around that long faces this problem, whether they've had the history that they've had or not. And, you know, I think if you can still sell out and play 18,000 seat arenas, that's pretty darn good.
Yeah, for sure. And that's just it. I mean, you see the kind of tour they're putting on. It's extensive. They're going to Europe. They're going to South America. They're playing all over the
U.S. Not Brazil, apparently.
And at least not as many dates in Brazil. I think they do have maybe one or two dates still on the schedule down there. But
oh yeah,
it's just, again, it's just because they're backing out of a 56, almost 60,000 seat baseball stadium certainly doesn't imply that they're failing. But again, you know, I think it is a matter of kind of setting the ticket target, setting the price, having it make sense. And really the remainder of their U.S. tour, it appears, just doing a quick glance through here, is all like hockey arenas. So, I mean, that is
more reasonable,
clearly, yeah, size wise. So, you know, again, I'm happy they're able to continue to go on. I think, you know, that's the one thing, like people, it's everybody's right to decide whether they want to see the new Linkin Park.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I think it's also, if the band wants to continue forward after everything they've been through, I think that's awesome. And if you want to go see them and find out for yourself, there's plenty of dates still there, including tickets still obviously available for that LA show. That's going to be at the Intuit, yeah, Dome, which I think is a really cool, like state of the art technological venue. So I think people who go to that are going to get a really good show out of it.
And, you know, some tickets left for Sonic Temple. So maybe give that a shot. That's a really great value as far as the amount of bands you're seeing. Kind of looking at their world tour, though, to be honest, I'm not the largest Linkin Park fan, but if I could see a show with Queens of the Stone Age and AFI, I think that alone would be fine enough. I don't know if I'd need any of the other acts.
That's very true. Hopefully Sonic Temple, we don't get like 10 inches of rain like we have the last 4 days during,
we're due for some dry weather eventually, I think.
Hopefully so. Chance of flurries tonight, I understand. So it's just,
awesome.
Just
never ends.
It's, spring in Ohio. You just never know what you're going to get, but yeah, check out Linkin Park. You want to see them on tour, plenty of opportunities to do that. So make sure you go check them out. Before we get into the new music, just a reminder, check out our website, nerdcastempire.com. We're on pretty much all social medias that you need to check out. We post when we're streaming, and we also post links to the streams as they go live. Just another slight change to our schedule. I mentioned it yesterday just because of work and everything else. Just things are kind of crazy right now. Going to kind of consolidate our streams more toward the weekend. So our new streams will be on Mondays and Saturdays, 8:30 a.m. Eastern time. Next Saturday, obviously, we will not have a stream because of anime convention. So we'll probably next Monday when we come back, that'll be a recap stream of that convention. But we will be with you tomorrow morning, 8:30 a.m. Eastern, with the latest nerdy news with the Nerdcast News Report. And then, of course, next Sunday night, 7 o'clock Eastern time, we'll be back with another episode of the Hard Rock Empire. It'll be the music of March the 28th coming up next week on the podcast. And of course, this is episode 60 of the Hard Rock Empire, episode number 155 wow. overall of the Nerdcast Empire. And we appreciate you joining us, whether you join us live or on the VOD. It is time to get to the new music. Of course, each and every week, as I will ramble through my spiel, I will also paste the playlist in the chat. Each and every week, Mike goes through and he will pull the new releases for a given date. And then he will come up with a playlist of a track from as many of those releases as he can find. And then he will put that playlist together on YouTube, which I will be sharing in the chat right now. And then we go through and we pick a couple of bands and a couple of albums each to spotlight as far as new releases for a given date. The given date in question today is March the 21st. So it's releases on or around March the 21st. Not every country releases on exactly the same date. And of course, we do pick bands from all over the world, so it's really the wide world of the Hard Rock Empire, and we're going to continue that theory again today as we continue to span the globe to find the best hard rock and heavy metal to bring to you each and every week. And with that said, it's time to get to Mike's picks, and a couple of really good picks this week, and like you said, an opportunity this week with the playlist, maybe not having as many, I don't want to say slam dunks, but ones that really kind of hit that thing that we're looking for. So it was kind of an opportunity to experiment outside of what we would normally pick. And you did that for sure. I don't know that I necessarily did that, but you have you know, at least one of your two picks that may be a little more outside the box, but good stuff all the way around. What have you got to get us started this week?
Yeah, and you kind of mentioned going around the world. This week, no new or exciting fresh countries, kind of two that I tend to frequent fairly often as far as my musical tastes go. With that in mind, the first pick of mine is a German speed thrash and power metal band. It's their second full-length studio album. They are Skullforge, and the album is called Cosmic Crusade Chronicles, Stories from the... never mind.
Yeah, I mean, if you hadn't told me that what their genre was, I think I probably could have guessed it from the name and the album art. Obviously, if you're watching on the video podcast, you can see the album art. It's pretty epic, and these guys are pretty epic as well. I think the album title kind of gives that away too.
Yeah, definitely an over the top kind of band. This new album follows their 2023 debut LP, Intergalactic Battle Tunes, Stories from Behind the Dark Side of the Moon to the Milky Way and Beyond. So if you're curious why their new album title is titled the way it is, that is probably why, as a reference to the first album. To me, these guys sound like a mixture of Gamma Ray meets Dragon Force, which... it's definitely not a bad thing. The band, who formed back in 2020, consists of Chris Merzinski on drums, Fabs McBlackskull on guitars, Polly McSkullwood on vocals and guitars, and Felix the Kerninator Kern on bass.
All right.
Great names. Their Bandcamp describes them probably better than I could. It says the following: beware, you wandering misfits, straight out of the cold, dark void of space. Seriously, they've seen some things. Skullforge is here with a power metal juggernaut that leans heavy on the thrash, like a sonic wrecking ball wrapped in a flaming guitar solo. High-speed power metal that'll melt faces, blow minds, and leave the masses begging for an encore. Buckle up, Earthlings, it's about to get loud. You know, if you're a fan of German power metal and you like kind of the speed, over-the-top chorus, like something you could hear it at Wacken, but still kind of that Dragon Force-y kind of crazy frantic pacing of the songs, I think you'll definitely dig this stuff. Standout tracks on the album include Great Day to Kill, Make Space Great Again, Dark Alliance, Power Heart, Order of the Soul, and the track that I picked to check out, the song Journey.
Yeah, I definitely see where the comparisons come from. It definitely has that driving bass drum, like just really bringing in the bottom of that, but you also have the great vocals, the power guitars. I mean, it's exactly kind of what in my mind I thought it was going to sound like. It was pretty much right on the mark.
It kind of has that final song in Guitar Hero thing, yeah, going on, which is always really cool. But yeah, it's a really fun album. Definitely worth checking out.
Yeah, check those guys out. Skullforge, really good release from these guys this week. As always, you have two picks. What is pick number two?
Yeah, so for pick number two, I kind of went a little outside of the wheelhouse. This isn't power metal. This isn't thrash. This isn't gothic rock per se. This is just kind of a power trio rock band. But it is the first full-length studio album from this band from Helsinki, Finland. Kind of a rebranded version of a former group. The group was previously known as Marco Lupinero and the Loud Ones. They are now simply going under the name Lupinero, and this is their debut, self-titled Lupinero.
Yeah, it was definitely one of the tracks that jumped off of the playlist this week. Again, just for being a little bit different, but also being high quality, and definitely interested to hear your thoughts on it.
Yeah, the track for the playlist, Pickup Artist, was really good. The video was really fun, and the rest of the album kind of follows suit. It's got a lot of variety to it, but all sounds pretty good. I mentioned the band now going under the surname of singer and bassist Marco Lupinero. He is joined with him in this endeavor by Simon Grundvall on drums and Jim Heikkinen on guitar. They had a hit single last year, Dad Bod Rock God, which caught the attention of the Icons Creating Evil Art label in Sweden, who signed them up. Per their press kit, the band draws energy and spirit from the 90s grunge and punk rock scenes, infusing their sound with elements of metal, post-punk, ambient textures, and classic heavy rock. Based on some of the track names and the video I mentioned for Pickup Artists, it seems like the band doesn't take themselves too seriously, which is always a plus. It's always refreshing to hear a band that can do that and still rock. Kind of going into what's going on with the album and kind of the influences there. In a press release, Marco says that the first single, Everything/Nothing, is a perfect representation of the album's existential themes of generational nihilism and the struggle to find meaning. It's angry, cathartic, and it's honest. You do kind of get that on this album, but at the end of the day, it's just really good rock that's got some variety to it. And, you know, if they weren't nailing the sound, the message wouldn't really matter at the end of the day. And I think both get the job done. Standout tracks on the album include Everything/Nothing, Killing Time, Running on Empty, Sapiens, Angelo, and the track that I picked to take a listen to, the song Pickup Artist.
Yeah, like I said, listening to the track on the playlist, I thought it definitely had some potential and definitely maybe want to go back and listen to the whole album at some point, but a little bit different kind of than some of the other bands that we typically hear on the playlist and on the podcast, but they've got a really great sound.
Yeah, you know, it's another example of why isn't this band on radio regularly. Like, all their tracks are pretty radio friendly. I think lyrically and even sonically, it's something that people could latch onto and actually feel relevant, even in 2025, where it feels like, at least over here, rock has been so de-emphasized. I think sometimes it's just a matter of pick some good bands, get them on the airwaves and let people enjoy them. And I think these guys are one of those bands that could really be big if given the opportunity.
For sure. Definitely check that album out. Lupinero with their self-titled, one of the two picks for Mike for the week of March the 21st. I have two picks as well. And we kind of locked in on the AOR stuff again this week. And it turns out Pride and Joy, both of these bands coming from that label, I guess not a terrible surprise, is that label has really been producing some great bands. And we're going to start things off by going to France. This is the French AOR band Heartline with the album Falling Heaven. These guys were founded back in 2020. This is their third full-length album. It's interesting that Pride and Joy themselves compares this band to Giant, Survivor, and White Lion. I think that's fair. They also list influences as Whitesnake, Foreigner, Journey, Winger, Bad English, and Giant again. Giant getting two shout outs. So again, I mean, you kind of know what we're looking at here. I saw another review that compared lead singer Emmanuel Crace's voice to Stryper's Michael Sweet. And I apologize, these are French names, and French is one of the foreign languages I haven't taken, so my apologies if I get these names wrong. But I can see a little bit of a comparison between he and Michael Sweet. There's definitely some overlap there. Other members of the band include kind of the guy who got it all started, the guitarist and producer, Ivan Gluevic. I believe that's it. Joris Gilbaud on keyboards, Walter Francais on drums, and Dominique Broad on bass. And a lot of reviews I read about this noted that this album has more punch and power than previous releases. I haven't heard their old stuff, but this does feel like an album that has a little more drive and force than maybe your average AOR album. It also kind of makes you think that maybe this band is kind of finding their groove and maybe kind of moving in a heavier direction as they go forward. And it kind of makes me excited to see where they go from here, because they've really done a fantastic job with this album. And it's kind of interesting as they kind of lock in on what their sound is, where that might take them. But make no mistake, it's a band that takes their style and vibes from the 80s, as you heard from all those bands I listed earlier. And they certainly honor that decade of music well with this album. Standout tracks include God Has a Plan, Every Time You Smile, Liar, and the track we're going to listen to on the podcast, Fire in the Sky. Yeah, they jump right into the next verse after the chorus. But yeah, just like I said, just a really good AOR album. And I think, you know, if you put these two bands on the spectrum of melodic rock, these guys definitely are more toward the rock end of melodic rock, whereas my second pick is going to be a little more toward the melodic end, which is completely fine. But like I said, I think these guys really rocked, and this is a really, really good album from them. Mike, your thoughts on Heartline?
Yeah, really, really good sound. I enjoy it. It amazes me that there can be musicians putting a band together in 2020 and wanting to achieve this sound. Like, it's refreshing. It's, you don't expect it, but when we encounter it, because I mean, we, with the bands we review, a lot of times we have bands that have been around since the 80s who have come back. But when you're talking about new projects starting in the last 5 or 6 years, it's just awesome to hear that there are bands wanting to sound this way.
Yeah, for sure. And they've really nailed that sound. And again, if they're kind of really locking in on something maybe a little harder than what they had done before, I think they're headed in the right direction. This was a really good album. Definitely worth checking out. The guys from Heartline with their new release this week. As always, I have two picks, and we're staying right here with the same record label. In fact, as I was looking up Facebook pages, one of them commented on the other one's Facebook page. So kind of fitting that we're going to pick a band. As Mike mentioned, some of these bands have been around for a while. Well, here is one of those bands. We're going to go to Gothenburg, Sweden for this AOR band founded in 1986. This is Alien from when the album is When Yesterday Comes Around. Their debut album was in 1988. Metal Temple called these guys the Swedish equivalent of the band Europe, which I think that's a pretty apt comparison. The band is Jim Jidhead on vocals, Tony Borg on guitars, and Toby Tarek on drums. And these three have been together pretty much since day one, and they've been going strong for nearly 40 years and still sound awesome. Again, funny that I picked these two albums because they were number one and number two on the Pride and Joy Music Store for the month of March. So again, you know, these certainly have done really well and wrapping up or getting the midpoint of March with this week. These guys clearly are right there at the top. Unlike Heartline, as I mentioned earlier, this is definitely a little more on the melodic end of the melodic rock spectrum. Feels a little bit like Journey to me as far as kind of that sound. But it's a great album, a really easy listen. Makes me want to go back and see what their old albums sound like. Maybe after I finish this Frontiers run on the Vault, maybe Pride and Joy is next. I'll go through and see what some of these bands have, because I would love to kind of check out some of their old stuff. And to me, this is a really great AOR album. If you're a fan, especially ones that are a little bit more toward the melodic side, I think you're really going to dig this album. Standout tracks include Strange Way, I Belong to the Rain, In the End We Fall, and the song that we are talking about on this podcast, If Love Is War. But I think if you hear that clip, you see where my Journey vibes come from.
Oh, there. Yeah, absolutely.
That there at the end. But again, I mean, again, these guys have been doing this for 40 years and they sound great. This is a band I would love to see live, if both of the bands I picked. But certainly these guys have been doing it for a long time. Love to see them tour the States at some point and get a chance to hear them. But really awesome stuff from Alien. Mike, your thoughts on these guys?
Yeah, kind of conversely to what I mentioned with the previous band, it's cool when there's a band that's been around this long that's still doing it. Pride and Joy, you know, we've mentioned them in the past. They're another one of those labels that tend to sign bands that fall kind of within our taste spectrum. Looking at their website, other bands that we've mentioned in the past that are on that label, you're looking at Allocate, Boguslaw Balsarek's Cry Lord, Crying Steel, Danger Zone. So definitely not not anything new for us. And this is just another addition to that list of really strong bands that, that are flying the Pride and Joy Records banner.
Yeah. Really good stuff coming out of that label right now. And two really great bands that I had the chance to listen to this week, and Alien, the most recent. Check these guys out when Yesterday comes around. That is going to wrap up our new music for this week. And again, check out the playlist. There's some really wild stuff on there, including a new metal band out of India,
yeah,
which is, was totally off the map for me. But I, you know, I give them a lot of credit. Like what they do really well. I think there's definitely some off the beaten path type of picks this week to be had if you want to check out the full playlist.
Yeah. And we had some major label, yes, action going on too, that, you know, we tend to not pick just because we want to spotlight maybe some of the lesser known to us in our stratosphere bands. But we did have a new one from Cradle of Filth, yep, The Screaming of the Valkyries. What I've heard of that's really good so far. We had Lordi with a new one, Limited Edition, which again sounded like Lordi, not a bad thing. Pop Evil had a new one as well, What Remains. So there's definitely some big names out there, and you know what we've been talking about, which is always great too.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely check out the playlist. You can check out some other options for the week of March the 21st. It's time to head into the vault, where Mike and I will each talk about an album that you need to check out. And Mike is, again, as I said last week and probably the weeks before that, is literally going into his vault. He's going through albums that he owns to talk about some of these and trying to pick ones that he didn't talk kind of the first time through the vault picks. And we're on to the letter F this week. A lot of great choices for the letter F, but what have you got for us for the vault?
Yeah, definitely some options under the letter F. But what I end up going with, sometime last year, I actually found on Amazon a box set of this band's kind of their major run of albums from 1977 to 1991. This is their album from 1984, which sold 3 million copies, mind you. The band is Foreigner, and the album is Agent Provocateur.
Yeah, this is a great album. Talk about some mega hits on there. Maybe, if not my favorite Foreigner song, one of my top two or three favorite Foreigner songs of all times on this album.
Yeah, same here for sure. To me, Foreigner was always kind of a greatest hits band. That was kind of how I was introduced to them. Their Greatest Hits and Beyond album I listened to over and over again, kind of in the early days of me owning CDs and listening to music. So I'm no stranger to the band, but I never really got into their individual albums that much. Just never had them around. I think Double Vision might have been the only exception, because I do remember some of the tracks off it that weren't greatest hits tracks and really liking them. But so I picked up this box set on Amazon for a reasonable price. It contained their albums from 1977's debut self-titled all the way up to 1991's Unusual Heat. So basically the span of all their hits, and then also Unusual Heat, which was the kind of the first album without Lou Gramm and before they reconciled, and just didn't, it was definitely the drop off after a run of a lot of successful albums. You know, I seem like with Foreigner, their story is kind of similar to a lot of bands of that era, where they started kind of shifting away from the rock stuff and doing more softer music and that finding them a lot of success. But also there's kind of an expiration date on that too, where people, that was going to fall out of favor. And, you know, I mentioned 1991's Unusual Heat. By 1991, a lot of the bands that were doing that kind of music suffered on some hard times. You know, talking about this album, it's the album with I Want to Know What Love Is, which is their biggest single ever. It was the only number one single in both the UK singles chart and US Billboard charts they had. Also had That Was Yesterday, which was a huge hit as well, reaching number 12 in the US. Kind of going into the Wikipedia on it, because I was kind of curious about the production and just kind of the backstory around the album. The production began back in June of 1983, and they had the writing completed by September of that year. But by Christmas, the initial producer, Trevor Horn, backed out of the project, feeling he and the band were heading in different directions. Reading more into that, it kind of sounded like he was wanting to make them even more of like an electronic band than what they were, and that wasn't really their thing. So after that, they ultimately brought in Alex Sadkin, who at the time had been working on a Thompson Twins album, who actually performed backing vocals on this album, which is kind of interesting, and I wouldn't have realized that. Alex Sadkin, he and Mick Jones both kind of suggested that the recording seemed to last forever for this album, where you had people kind of not showing up when they were supposed to, like lyric writing and changes being made during the mixing, which irritated Sadkin because he didn't like being there if they were still writing things. He wanted to be there simply for the production work. So it sounded like the fact that something actually was created was probably a accomplishment in and of itself. And kind of going back to the electronic thing, looking at the personnel notes on Wikipedia, not even counting Mick Jones, who played keyboards, they had 7 other people credited for playing synthesizers or keyboards. So yeah, maybe they were kind of leaning a little too far into that side of their sound. The other funny thing about Foreigner is I just kind of knew growing up that they were never really favored amongst like the rock critics and rock press, but some of what Wikipedia has for the examples of the critical response to this album were just brutal. This one here, a reviewer from Cream magazine said, "On this, their latest excursion into the gaping jaws of pulverizing mediocrity, our boys continue to wrestle with an all-too-turgid identity crisis. They still can't decide whether it's stupider to aspire to a poor man's Led Zeppelin status or settle for being a weightier version of Chicago. Some swinging choice, huh? Either way, they lose, and this record is simply jammed with one dull defeat after another." I mean, ouch.
Yeah, that's pretty rough.
Like, for an album that 3 million people felt it was worthwhile to buy. Like, I don't get it. Yeah, as I got into the album, the opening track, which isn't really a hit of theirs, Tooth and Nail, I thought, man, this is a really rocking song. Like, they should have more songs like this. And classic rock critic Malcolm Dome rated it and one of the other songs on this album as being part of Foreigner's 10 most underrated tracks, Stranger in My Own House being one at number 6 on his list, and Tooth and Nail at number 2. He went as far as to call it the antidote to I Want to Know What Love Is, which, yeah, it's fair. I Want to Know What Love Is, tremendous love song. But I think having a song like Tooth and Nail on there just kind of balances it out, where you're like, yeah, this is still a rock band, even if the hits don't necessarily align with that in 1984. You know, I really like the album front to back. Like, it's a solid album. You know, 3 million people can't be wrong. Kind of an interesting note past that is, you know, they went on, they released another album, which sold pretty well. Inside Information sold over 1 million. Then Lou Gramm left the band. In 1991, they released Unusual Heat, which saw a drop off in sales, no real hits. But then Lou Gramm ended up rejoining the band, and the story behind that involved he and Mick Jones in a hotel in Los Angeles in 1992 that they got trapped inside due to the LA riots. Wow. And I guess while they were trapped inside that hotel room, they kind of reconciled and ended up getting back together musically. So kind of an odd thing there.
Yeah.
Standout tracks on this album include Tooth and Nail, That Was Yesterday, I Want to Know What Love Is, Stranger in My Own House, and A Love in Vain. It's just kind of cool for someone like me who on this album, I really only knew kind of the hits. That Was Yesterday, I Want to Know What Love Is. So to kind of hear where they were at musically throughout the album was actually a really cool thing. And, you know, I'm kind of excited to look at more of the albums that I haven't had a chance to listen to yet.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, That Was Yesterday is one of my all time favorite Foreigner songs. That was the song I was referencing. It's just,
oh yeah,
it's a great track. But like you said, Tooth and Nail and Stranger in My Own House are also really great songs that don't get, they weren't singles. I mean, they clearly, you know, radio airplay, even though this album was clearly doing well, in spite of what the critics said, they didn't care for either one of those songs, which is a shame. But again, they do sound very different than the hit songs, which is, so you kind of get why maybe that happened. But again, Foreigner's great. I feel like they're another group that sometimes gets lumped in with the with music because of songs like I Want to Know What Love Is. They get lumped in as this saccharine sweet, like, just no substance, maybe not even really a ton of talent, overproduced groups of that era. And maybe even, you know, as far as saying they kind of sold out from some of their early hits of the 70s. And I don't know that that's necessarily fair, as much as that's not what was hits in the mid 80s. Yeah. And so many of these groups, whether it's a group like Yes, whether, I mean, there's so many of them, you know, Journey, Styx, I mean, so many of them had to kind of sell out their sound to create radio friendly stuff because it made them money, because that's what the goal is to make a living at it. But, and because of that, somehow rock critics just lambasted them for it.
It had to be a weird scenario, because, and I've never really thought about it until looking at this album, and that's, they probably to some degree had to go that route because they weren't as heavy as some of the bands that were now becoming prominent in the hard rock space. By 1984, you had obviously Van Halen, who were on top of their game. You had Bon Jovi releasing their first album, Whitesnake Slide It In. Let's see, what else do we have? Scorpions, Love at First Sting. Obviously Metallica, Ride the Lightning came out that year. You had Dio, Last in Line. Like, there were a lot of bands kind of pushing into the hard rock side of the rock sphere. Foreigner, who had already kind of pivoted towards some of those softer songs, I don't know if there was really a home for them anymore in the harder rock realm.
Yeah, I mean, it's a legitimate point, and I think because of that, it's like you go where you know you can break through. And again, yeah, can't blame them for that, but no. I feel like the, you know, critically they get kind of hammered for it, but that's a great album. You should check it out. Check out all Foreigner stuff. They're really talented.
And I think sometimes I don't fully give Lou Gramm the credit he deserves for being just a great lead singer. Like, yeah, his voice on this album, just some of those songs, you're like, man, this guy's nailing it. Like, this is the X factor. This is what they have that these other bands don't.
Yeah. And unlike someone like Peter Cetera, who went on to have his own like solo success that kind of put him maybe on a different platform than say the rest of Chicago, Lou Gramm really didn't have, there wasn't that big solo hit that followed up his Foreigner stuff that people remember him for. And because of that, I think he does maybe get forgotten a little bit, but yeah, I mean, the dude can still sing. And if you're in South America, you're going to get to hear him sing coming up on their tour. So, certainly kind of cool. It'd be really cool to see him maybe do that here in the States as well as a tour. I would definitely sign up just to go see him, honestly, at this point. No offense to Kelly Hansen, who's really great, but
yeah,
you know, sure. You know, Lou Gramm is Lou Gramm, an all-time legend of the business. But yeah, really cool stuff. Definitely check out Foreigner. They're really awesome. My vault pick, as I mentioned a few weeks ago, we are headed through the bands that have signed and released albums with Frontiers Records, because I've picked so many of them for our podcast. We figure, why not? We are on to letter B. It's a 2-week journey through the letter B. The first week I picked a band. The second week a randomizer picked a band and an album. And again, the rule is I have to pick an album that was released by Frontiers. So I can't cheat and pick a band that later they released like their 15th album on Frontiers and then pick like their biggest album to talk about on the podcast. So the band we're going to talk about this week is a band that was formed in 1989 in New York City. They are Beggars and Thieves, and the album we're going to talk about on the podcast is We Are the Brokenhearted. This is a band that has that very classic Frontiers AOR sound. They've got a little bit of a bluesy note to their music, but very solid. They're also another band, unfortunately, that falls into the wrong place, wrong time. You were just talking about it with as we get to the turn of the decade into the early 90s. Again, these guys formed in 1989. Their first album was released, the self-titled, in 1990. So again, they were kind of coming in at the wrong time as this type of music, the glam style of music, was going out. And because of that, they would release another album until 1997. The band was originally formed by Louis Merlino on vocals and Ron Mancuso on guitars. Bassist Phil Soussan, who had played for Ozzy Osbourne, and drummer Bobby Borg, who later played for Warrant. They released their first album, didn't really necessarily have like that huge song off of that album, but then, you know, some of their band members started leaving to maybe more famous bands, and then eventually, you know, they just kind of, I won't say fell off the face of the earth, but they certainly weren't very prominent. They did release another album in 1999, then came back in 2010 with an EP called Stone Alone. And then again, Frontiers drops in. They sign them. They release We Are the Brokenhearted in 2011 and seem to get critical acclaim, which is great to see for a band that certainly kind of disappeared there for a while. The video for the first video for the album had the single We Come Undone, which features a guest appearance by Jake E. Lee. you know, it's a band that, you know, again, is another one of these bands from that era that just had bad timing. And because of that, probably didn't hit it big. If they would have started maybe 3 or 4 years earlier, I think this band probably could have had some hits in that late 80s period. But unfortunately, they kind of dropped in at the wrong time. And because of that, just didn't really hit. But again, if you're a fan of AOR music, if you're a fan of kind of that glam style of music from the late 80s, early 90s, you're going to enjoy this album. I thought it was a really easy, enjoyable listen from beginning to end. I'd like to kind of go back and check out the rest of their stuff now, because again, this was only their last album, but they haven't released anything in a while. But you know, who knows, maybe they're still around. So maybe someday Frontiers will maybe get these guys together to record something new, which would be really cool. Standout tracks on the album include We Come Undone, Oil and Water, Innocence, and We Are the Brokenhearted, the title track. But again, just another band that just feels like a victim of the wrong place in the or maybe the right place in the wrong time. 3 or 4 years earlier, it could have been a totally different story for these guys.
Yeah, it still amazes me how, and the industry does it to this day, how it's once they decide something isn't fashionable anymore, they just cut ties with all of it and they don't offer any kind of support to these bands who still have a viable sound and still are really talented and probably write good music. But yeah, it's just not the place for that anymore. We've moved on. It's what's so fascinating about doing the podcast is you see so many of these bands, and some here in the States and a lot obviously in Europe, that are still going after that same sound and are doing it with success, despite the fact that here in America, people quit caring about that kind of music. And honestly, in a lot of ways, rock in general for a while now.
Yeah, it's true. And it's been great to kind of dig this stuff back up and see that these guys are really talented. And it's just kind of sad that they were kind of kicked to the curb for the longest time. And I'd love to hear them release something new. If Frontiers is out there listening, like, we would love to get these guys back in the studio and check them out. But really cool stuff. I thought it was a really good album. Definitely worth checking out if you're a fan of that type of music. The randomizer has chosen and actually chose an album or a band that they showed up on our playlist at the end of 2024. Brazen Abbott's going to be coming up next week. Okay. They had a new release. We'll tell you about the album that I picked for them, or that the randomizer picked, but it's kind of a limited choice. We'll talk about that next week, but excited to kind of dig in, because there's another name that's tied to this album that we talk about all the time on this podcast.
Shocking.
So I know that's shocking with the Frontiers band, but we will definitely get to that coming up next week. And it's time to wrap things up with the Power Trio. This is our new segment where we choose a question, the top three of something related to hard rock and heavy metal. And then we basically ask everybody that wants to chime in on the podcast, and you can always chime in as well. Let us know what your pick is for the Power Trio. We might share your picks on the podcast, but Chris is currently putting his picks in the chat. So before we get to Chris, Mike, I know you have a chance to talk to Shane, our kind of unofficial Hard Rock Empire member at this point, as he chimes in on the Power Trio each and every week. What has he got for us?
Yeah, you know, when I jumped into this topic, my first thought was there was one that just immediately hit me. Like, this is obviously one of my picks. I wanted to take some time and kind of browse through my collection to kind of think if anything else would jump out at me. And as I did that, I text Shane. I'm like, hey, man, here's the topic this week. What are you thinking? And man, he got back to me really fast. And a couple of the picks he had, when I read them, I'm like, oh, man, like, if I'd have gotten farther into my collection, I probably would have picked one of these, but I'm not going to. I'm going to go ahead and let him have the pick.
I should mention, because I rambled all through there and I didn't, again, reiterate what the topic was, which is that opening tracks off of albums. I mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, but for those who might be tuning in at the end, the top three best opening tracks. And again, a reminder, we talk about hard rock. Basically, any band that would be covered under the umbrella of the Hard Rock Empire counts. So it doesn't necessarily have to be a metal band or a hard rock band. If it's an AOR or whatever it may be, it counts for that. But yeah, go ahead and continue with that.
So yeah, the couple of the picks that he gave me out of his three, I'm like, man, I should have taken that for myself, because those are amazing. And sometimes they end up shining kind of beyond the album itself as a whole. I think for one of his, that's definitely the case. That being said, his picks are at number one. You have the song As I Am from Dream Theater, from their 2003 album Train of Thought. Just Train of Thought's a great album, but great opening track. Number two, and one that I probably would have picked just because it's kind of the high point to me for this entire album. From 2005, we have Nevermore's song Born off the album This Godless Endeavor. If I ever want to introduce someone to the band Nevermore, Born is the song I play for them because it's just, it's so intense and just different. Everything about it is great. Great chorus. Just a tremendous song all out. And number three, you know, I mentioned after he gave me number three, I'm like, man, just for this guy's contributions to 80s movie soundtracks, he should be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. This is Stan Bush. The song is from the Transformers movie soundtrack from 1986. The song is called The Touch.
Yeah.
The Transformers 86 movie soundtrack is the best movie soundtrack of all time.
Without a doubt.
It's no question. And Stan Bush, whether it was the songs he did for this movie, song he did for Bloodsport, just a legend. And I mean, great picks all around.
Yeah, he did well. Those are all really solid picks for sure. And I feel a little shame that I didn't think of The Touch, because that is an amazing opening song.
My mind wasn't thinking soundtracks, so I think that helped.
But good stuff. Chris has got his picks in the chat. Before we get your picks, Mike, tell us what Chris has for us this week.
Yeah, you know, I stayed away from this band because I don't know if I would have been able to pick the right choice out of all their albums, but he did pretty well. The song Blackened to open up Metallica's And Justice for All album. Great song. Great album. I mean, did the rest of the album retain that momentum? Probably not, but there are still some great tracks. Freyden's A Sanity, still one of my favorite Metallica songs off that. Number two for him is Them Bones, kicking off Alice in Chains' Dirt album. Alice in Chains is another band that has some great opening tracks in their albums, and that's certainly one of them. And finally, for number three, we have Far Cry to start off Rush's Snakes and Arrows album. Rush showing they can create some monstrous openers even at later stages of their career. Yeah, I mean,
that's as close.
No bad choices there at all.
Not at all. And that's as close as we've come to a duplicate pick. We'll just say that before we get to my picks.
We
now actually have the same band being picked by more than one person, but not the same song. But we'll get to that when we get to my picks. But we're getting close. At some point, all of our music tastes overlap so much, somebody's going to pick the same actual song for these. But
Chris does also want to give a special shout out to Moon Baby off of Godsmack's debut. We talked about them earlier, obviously. And it's hard not to include the Grudge off of Tool's Lateralis.
It'd be remiss if Chris didn't throw some Tool in there.
Yeah,
for sure. Big Tool fan. But yeah, all good picks for sure from Chris. All right, Mike, give us your three for the power trio.
So the obvious one for me, and this goes back to an album that I was late to the party on. I didn't get into it till high school, even though it came out in 1990. But this was like the album I listened to get pumped up for tennis matches. It has the greatest opening track, and it's probably the greatest metal album of all time, arguably. The album is Megadeth's Rust in Peace, and the song is Holy War's The Punishment Due.
Yeah.
Just such a great tone setter for what is just a masterpiece of speed metal. You can't not pick that.
I'll be honest, that was on the list of things I was considering, but I had a feeling you would probably pick that, so I stayed away from that, because to me, like, the first two songs off of that album are just,
yeah,
just because you come right back with Tornado of Souls right after that, like, doesn't really get any better than that.
Hangar 18,
I'm sorry.
Yeah,
Hangar 18 right after that, it doesn't get any better than that for sure.
No, not at all. Great album. All the way front to back, like the title track, Rust in Peace Polaris, is also a tremendous track. For number two, I went with a band who their prior album kind of dulled their sound a bit. They got rid of the harsh vocals, and really it kind of sounded like them trying to be Metallica. So in 2008, when Trivium released Shogun, and the opening track Kyrste Gomen, you had kind of the harsher vocals. It just filled out their sound and was an awesome return to form, kind of from the Ascendancy days, for an album that was amazing. Shogun, again, first track to the title track, great, and that opening track just kind of sets the tone.
Yeah, it's a great song. That's a great album.
That was my ringtone back when I let my phone have ringtones and not be on mute all the time.
I was going to say, I think my phone, well, now that I have an iPhone, it just has a generic ringtone, I think. So it doesn't, I have to find Soul Education and then poured it back over, which is my ringtone for the longest time. The only Jamiroquai, well, that and Virtual Insanity. That's a great song as well. But Soul Education is a little more crossover meaning.
Absolutely.
Between some of our topics. But no, great choice there. What's number three?
Number three, you know, I was torn between a couple different options, and I picked this one because I feel like it was more important to me than maybe some of the other songs were just kind of important in general. This is kind of one of the earlier songs that got me into power metal, and the album that it came off of is a great album. I didn't really keep up with this band as much as some of the other ones. I moved on to other acts, but the song Hunting High and Low off of Stradivarius's Infinite album from 2000, amazing song. The album is great, and man, if you want to know about kind of that European power metal sound in the 2000s, late 90s, that's where you start.
Stradivarius is one of those bands that I feel like was already on the edge of ridiculousness here. And I mean that in the best possible way. And they just kind of kept going and pushing that boundary even farther that direction. Whereas some of the other power metal bands from that era kind of, I don't want to say settled down, but they kind of settled into something. They found that range of how crazy they wanted to be. These guys just seemingly wanted to continue to push that, but you're right. Hunting High and Low is an amazing track. And one that would be another really good choice to get you pumped up for something.
Yeah, for sure.
Great choices for the Power Trio. As I was looking through them, I was trying to think of albums that I really enjoy and kind of then picking a great opening track out of those albums. I wanted to pick one that was relatively modern because I knew a couple of them were going to be older ones. So I went back to one of my favorite fairly recent releases, not real recent anymore, but the Foo Fighters' Wasting Light. That was a really great album to me. It was, as we've talked about on the podcast, an album where they went back to recording via tape instead of digitally. And the opening song, Bridge Burning, off of that album was kind of gave you a setting. Obviously, it's a good rock song, but also kind of gave you the idea of how imperfect the album was going to be. Like, I think you can definitely tell that this was not an album that was mastered by Pro Tools. This was an album that was a tape, because there's, you know, it sounds as close to a live studio album as you can get. And it's just a really great rock song that opened up and really just kind of set the tone for that entire album. I really, really enjoyed that. Any thoughts?
Yeah, that's a great tune. Foo Fighters came to my mind as I was going through my collection, but I was thinking more Echo, Silence, Patience, Grace. Looking at the track listing there, it opens with The Pretender, which is a great song.
Yeah,
but like, I enjoy Long Road to Ruin as a song more than The Pretender, so I end up moving on to other options. But I mean, another band that really knows how to open an album.
For sure. Really great stuff there. Definitely an album you need to check out. Again, I knew this, my other two picks were going to be older, so we're headed to Journey. The album Frontiers that came out, it opens up side one with Separate Ways, Worlds Apart. That to me is just a great track to come out of the gate. But it's also, and both of these last two picks are just cases where they just hammered it in the front, the side one of the two side album. You have Separate Ways, Worlds Apart, Center My Love, Chain Reaction, After the Fall, and Faithfully on that side A. That is just really could be five hit songs. Chain Reaction didn't hit as much, but that's a great rock track. But Separate Ways, Worlds Apart to me, like immediately with that synth part coming out of the gate and then the guitars kicking in, just kind of get you started there.
Yeah, great album. Great track for sure. You know, there are plenty of options for Journey that you could have gone with as well if you wanted to go a different direction. I think the album Escape, opening track, Don't Stop Believing. The album Departure has Any Way You Want It as the opening track. Both great. Girl Can't Help It on Raised on Radio. That was a good song, too. Yep. Probably not to that level. But yeah, I mean, great band, great tracks. Can't go wrong.
Yeah, for sure. And I mentioned we almost had a duplicate. I also picked a Rush album, went with a different one. I first was going to just pick 2112 because it opens with 2112. That's the whole first side of the album. But I thought, nah, that's probably stretching a little too much. So instead, I went with Moving Pictures. Starts out with Tom Sawyer out of the gate. But again, that first side is Tom Sawyer, Red Barchetta, YYZ, and Limelight. Like, it doesn't really get any bigger than that. But Tom Sawyer just really kicks that whole first side off.
Yeah, just an iconic song. Can't argue with that at all. Rush is a great band. What more can I say? What hasn't already been said about Rush at this point?
Rush had lots of great options too. I mean, as I mentioned, 2112, obviously.
Permanent Wave, Spirit of Radio.
That was another thought there.
Great song.
That's a great song that definitely kicks that off that album. Those guys just knew how to get an album started and how important that was. And again, that's not to take anything away from Far Cry, as Chris already mentioned.
Signals. Sort of with Subdivisions.
Yep. So, again, really interesting topic. If you have three that you would like to share it in our Discord. Join the Discord. It's pinned on both of our live chats right now. Drop in there, say hi, and let us know what your favorite three opening tracks to albums are. We would love to see what you have to pick on the Power Trio. With that said, it is time to bring this episode of the Hard Rock Empire to a close. We appreciate you joining us, whether you've joined us live or on the VOD, as always. Big thanks to Chris for jumping into the chat with us. Big thanks to Mike for putting this all together. Big thanks to Stove Lake Media for their continued support of our podcast. And a big thanks to you for listening whenever and wherever you listen. And we appreciate our numbers have been up on YouTube, especially. We really appreciate that. Thanks. Please continue to share our posts on social media. Join our Discord. We're continuing to try to push forward here in 2025 to bigger and better things. And we hope you'll join us for all of those things. We'll be back in just about 12 hours time at 8:30 a.m. Eastern time on Monday morning with the Nerdcast News Report. We'll get you started with all the nerdy news you need to know to start your work week. But that is going to wrap things up. We'll be back again next Sunday night with another episode of the Hard Rock Empire, 7 o'clock Eastern time. Until then, don't forget to join the Empire, the Nerdcast Empire.